back to the Royal Academy at Edith Schwartz. We've got Edith here as a composer, as a thinker, as an inventor, as a kind of life force. No, that's a hard act. It's, you know, you are the hard act to follow. I don't want to. I first met him when I was a student, and he didn't remember anything about this at all. And to earn my money, I went and played in a group run by Olinda de Montes called Lontano. And I remember that we played a wonderful piece. What was that?
Is it the clarinet concerto?
No, it wasn't. It was an ensemble piece. As I remember. It was the same ones that had a piece of toy piano.
Could have been a piece with saxophone and 10 players, one with clarinet and 9 players, or piano and about 15 players.
And I remember looking at the score and
thinking, three different forms.
Immediately, and I think we may have exchanged a word or two at the time, thinking this was somebody who was clearly creatively rethinking what performers like to get from a score in such a way that it was completely addictive. And you'll see, those of you who don't know what his music looked like, will hear and see some of it in a minute. But what we're going to do, and he's going to do, is we're going to start with a very nice open discussion and see where we go. He's got something music to play. He's going to play. We're going to kind of play together in a kind of rough kind of way.
Of course,
those of you I know have certain interests. So let's make it so that, you know, we all know each other, so we can be as ask anything any time.
After I've said I have recordings to play, it turns out I don't have them.
Okay, let's make sure
we've got the piano, and then I'll go get the recording.
Okay. So let's get straight to it. I'll allow you to kick off, and we'll just see where
okay.
We're going. Please, if you'd like to sit down, please do.
I think I might. Yeah. I need to take brief notes. A really brief note. I did over coffee downstairs in the cafeteria. I gather the subject for today's notation, and all composers have to. Have to contend with that problem, that whole issue of notation. Even people who claim not to take it very seriously or not to use it themselves, in the very act of denying that, they're also confronting. I wanted to simply start with two definitions of music. We use the word music so casually and so loosely that I think we tend to forget that it can be approached on two very different levels. One is the actual activity of making sounds take place in time and in space like this, and that audible result strikes your eardrums, and that's obviously music. The other way of thinking about music is this paper and various sorts of symbols on paper, or perhaps another way of dealing with the whole problem of preserving, recording, transmitting your ideas in a form that's less ephemeral than that activity that just takes place in real time and then vanishes. And people very often confuse those. And of course, most conservatory students, of course, as they're about to go on stage to play second violin part in a string quartet, when they say, "Oh, I've forgotten my music." They mean this.
That's very curious, isn't it?
Well, that's what they're talking about. I mean, it's not that they've forgotten how to play the sounds. There's a wonderful, I always thought it was a wonderful guy, but Victor Borge.
Great thing.
Very funny pianist, who would come out and speak to the audience and tell lots of jokes, and he would do the funny shtick. For about 10 minutes or so, and he'd say, "Well, enough of my funny jokes. How would you all like some music?"
Yeah.
And everybody would cheer and clap and applaud, and he would pick up some manuscript paper and throw it at me. There's that same confusion.
It's the confusion of role of Gary Larson cartoon, the girlfriend's on stage, with on the things bubble is actually, he's playing piano, actually I'm a flutist.
So you do have to think about notation as referring to one of those two ways of dealing with music, but of course it refers to both. And very briefly, wrote down a few items for you. And I'm not going to take much time with this now, because I do perform with Peter, and we also want a place to put it, assuming I can find it and I'll go back. I wanted to set out three ways of thinking about notation, and I'll come back to them, I hope, and elaborate upon them later. One is simply communication. And that's really a tripartite definition in a way. There are three, I think, three kinds of communication that are interesting. One, of course, you're communicating with your performers, telling them in the most obvious level which finger to press down at which moment, or how much breath to use, or whatever. This, of course, assumes that the performer is someone other than yourself. And notation is, in a way, a natural consequence of the whole idea of people other than the composer performing the music. As long as I'm a player, I'm able to
separation of power.
Separation, I like that. That should be written in the
Constitution.
So there's that sense for communication. Then there's a different kind of communication, which I simply wrote down here because it was early in the morning and I hadn't had enough coffee. As communication with scholars. That sounds very pretentious, but I simply mean communication with others who are, they're not at the concert, they're not present, they're not performing the music. They may exist in the future. They may, in fact, be communicating in the future, giving other people a sense of what this music was like, perhaps what it sounded like, although that's not necessarily so.
Or what it could be like.
What it could be, yes, but an ideal performance might be. We'll never be realized. But there's a sense of creating a record, one that's not written in the sand, but that is absolutely permanent. And then communicating with yourself, you as the composer. Extending your ideas, your thoughts, developing them, manipulating them, developing them, to use a professional 19th century word. In ways that would be possible without notation. And I've over my years teaching at a liberal arts college in the States, I ran into many students who, they play their rock bands all their lives, they don't necessarily read music, they want to compose music. And some perfectly sweet thing would come up and say, I have this wonderful idea for a piece, but I don't know. And I play something with the piano. Stop. And we'll say, I can't go on. What can I do now? And I'll say, well, can you write with my home? And say, no, I can't do music. And then I try to explain that you can't do very much with this idea unless you can freeze it in some way. Make it permanent as these things are, and then hold it to the light and turn it around, turn it upside down, or backwards, see how you can change it. You don't necessarily need to be able to read music or even write music to do that. In the 21st century, you can make a recording of yourself playing, and use that tape or CD as material from which you could extend. But the notion that you're communicating with yourself, and I think all composers have this experience of working on a piece, and then the telephone rings, or the dinner bell rings, or you have to go to a concert, or going away for the weekend somewhere in the festival, and you have to leave the piece in measure 37. Mm-hmm. Just stuck in the middle of an eighth minute somewhere. And there's a wonderful feeling of coming back to it later, and it's still there.
And as you find yourself in a kind of co-rich position, being interrupted, and it's not still there anymore.
Well, that's true. Ideally, or maybe it's not ideal, it would be there waiting for you. And there's a part of your creative life which is separate from your everyday life. And you resume that when you want to
move. That's something which we've put this under the kind of general grouping of composer's hand because of the exhibition that my curator downstairs. But that what you've just said, which is going to be very obvious to a composer, and actually related to something that Paul was saying to me earlier today, is the idea that part of it is the active, when something goes onto the page, the one that realizing what's coming out, and then saying what's going to happen next when I look at this and develop it and step forward from what's come out and is in front of me. Mm-hmm. Because both, I mean, you're very interested in what happens when you see your music visually is interesting to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, very much.
Yeah. That actually is, I'm saying that truism, but a lot of people who are not composers might not see that actually the relationship to what the music looks like when you put it down yourself, mm-hmm. and when you realize it.
Well, the myth of composing is, well, they're two different myths, I guess, they're in conflict with each other. But one of them is that you have an entire piece in your head. Mm-hmm. It's probably this is true on both sides. But the